You know that feeling when you finally finish a project you've just been sweating over for weeks? You step back, you cross your arms, and you just sort of admire it.
Oh yeah, the builder's high. It's a very real thing.
It is. I mean, the wiring is perfectly straight, the components are snapped onto the Dion rail with that incredibly satisfying click, and you honestly just feel like a bit of a genius.
Right, until you realize.
Until you realize there's that one little nagging detail you ignored. That one thing you treated as a nice to have rather than a critical requirement because maybe you ran out of time or money or just patience.
I have a sneaking suspicion you're talking about the enclosure, the box itself.
I am absolutely talking about the box, the shell, the exact thing that actually stands between your very expensive engineering and the complete entropy of the universe.
Yeah, it's the classic trap, isn't it? You spend all your budget and brain power on the expensive electronics inside, the brains of the operation, and then you put it all inside a cheap metal shell because, well, it's just a box. How hard can a box be?
Exactly. And today's deep dive is based on a really fantastic and honestly kind of brave first-person narrative titled My DIY Electrical Panel Enclosure Journey. It details a project involving a three-phase motor starter, timer relays, contactors, I mean, real industrial stuff.
Heavy duty.
Yeah. And it details how a simple weekend project turned into an absolute masterclass in failure.
What I really love about this story is that it moves us completely beyond the dry data sheets. We aren't just reading tables today. We are going to look at what terms like NEMA 12, IP55, and the very confusing pollution degree actually mean when you're standing in a dusty, vibrating workshop and not in some clean testing lab.
So let's set the stage for you listening. Our builder starts out with a really clear goal. They want a compact control panel for a machine area in their workshop. Now let's describe that environment because this is where the trouble really begins. And let's be honest, it's not exactly a clean room, is it?
Far from it. The source material describes a machine area that is basically hostile territory for electronics.
Yeah.
I've got airborne dust from cutting and grinding, which is bad enough on its own.
Right.
But then you have occasional oil mist in the air from
Yeah.
lubrication systems. You have temperature swings, cold mornings heating up to hot afternoons.
And vibration, I'm guessing.
Oh, lots of vibration. This panel is sitting near heavy machinery, so the ground is shaking, the walls are shaking. It's a highly dynamic environment.
So definitely not sterile. And the builder knows their electronics. They're using really high quality internal parts. We're talking Schneider Electric contactors, Siemens miniature circuit breakers, Phoenix contact terminal blocks.
Right, they aren't wiring up a doorbell here. This is top-tier industrial-grade gear. They spent the money where it counts, or at least where they thought it counted.
That's the absolute tragedy of it. It's like putting a Ferrari engine into a cardboard box. Because
Yeah.
what did they actually choose for the enclosure?
They went to a local supplier and found a generic metal enclosure. The narrative mentions it looked perfect in dimensions, had a really clean powder coat finish, and the seller listed it as industrial and dust resistant.
Dust resistant. That phrase does a lot of heavy lifting there. It sounds a file.
It does, but it's marketing speak. It's not an engineering spec. Resistant is completely subjective. But because it was the right size and the right price, the builder just bought it immediately. They focused entirely on the internal layout, spacing, wire ducts, making it look pretty.
They assumed the box was just a passive element. Put the stuff inside, close the door, and you're done.
Exactly.
And for a while, it probably seemed fine. The panel looked great. But the source mentions a dust test that happened about 2 weeks later. What exactly happened there?
So the builder was troubleshooting an intermittent pilot light, just a small glitch, like a flickering LED on the door. But when they opened the panel to check the wiring, the pilot light was suddenly the least of their worries. They found a fine layer of dust along the bottom lip of the enclosure, and more worryingly, settling right near the terminal blocks.
In just 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And remember, in a machine shop, that isn't just fluffy household dust. That's likely conductive metal dust from grinding or an abrasive silica.
Which basically turns that panel into a time bomb. If that dust bridges the connection, you're looking at a dead short.
Exactly. So they decide to perform an autopsy on this enclosure. They need to figure out how the enemy is getting inside the gates.
Was it the metal itself? Like, was the box porous or something?
No, the steel was totally fine. It's almost always the entry points and the seals. They found three main culprits. First, a poorly tightened cable gland. They hadn't torqued it down specifically to the cable diameter, so there's a tiny, tiny gap.
Okay, so that's user error. What's number two?
The door gasket. And this one is on the manufacturer of that quote-unquote dust-resistant box. The compression near the hinge was terrible. The door was physically closed and latched, but the gasket wasn't actually being squeezed against the frame on the hinge side. It was leaving a hairline gap all the way down.
So the industrial box was basically failing at just being a box.
Yeah.
And the third culprit.
This is my favorite, mainly because we've all done this. I've done this. There was a tiny unused knockout hole that the builder had temporarily plugged with tape.
Oh no, the structural load-bearing electrical tape.
The very same. And the host of the narrative highlights a really key lesson here. In a workshop environment, temporary fixes become permanent liabilities very fast. With the oil mist and the constant heat cycles, the adhesive on that tape just gave up. It peeled back just enough to create a perfect little funnel for dust.
It's amazing how we lie to ourselves. Like, oh, I'll just tape this for now and buy the proper plug next week. And then 3 years later, the tape falls off and shorts out an expensive machine.
Exactly. This failure forced the builder to stop assuming and actually start reading the specs. And this brings us to the alphabet soup of ratings. I want to start with NEMA 12. I see this on everything industrial, and I always assumed it just meant tough metal box.
Right. In my head, NEMA 12 just translates to gray box that looks really heavy.
A lot of people treat it exactly that way. But NEMA 12 has a highly specific definition. It's intended for indoor industrial use. It's literally designed to protect against circulating dust, falling dirt, lint, fibers, and dripping non-corrosive liquids.
Circulating dust seems to be the key differentiator there, right?
It is, because NEMA 1 is falling dirt, which is gravity only. Think of a standard office panel. NEMA 12 handles dust floating in the air. But here is where the builder got burned. You cannot achieve NEMA 12 just by using sheet metal. It is entirely about the construction quality.
So that dust-resistant sticker was just a lie.
Well, it was heavily misleading. A true NEMA rating involves the door fit. It involves the latch pressure, ensuring the gasket is compressed evenly all the way around the perimeter. It's the seam design. You can't just stick a rubber strip on a bent piece of metal and call it NEMA 12 if the hinges don't actually apply pressure.
That's a huge distinction. It's the difference between a vague marketing claim and a certified construction standard.
Okay, yes.
So that's NEMA, which is largely a North American standard. But then we get into the IP ratings, IP54 versus IP55. Now, in my head, 55 is one number higher than 54, so it's naturally better. But is it enough of a difference to actually care about?
The builder thought the exact same thing initially. They thought, IP55 is just slightly better, so it's probably overkill for my shop. But they learned that you have to design for the behavior of the people in the room, not just the physical room itself.
What does that mean, designing for behavior?
Let's look at the numbers. The first digit, the 5, means dust protected. That's the same for both ratings. The second digit is the liquid protection. IP54, with the 4, is protected against splashes. Think of flicking water at it from a cup.
Okay, simple enough.
But IP55, with the 5, adds protection against water jets.
Water jets? But wait, this is an indoor workshop, not a car wash. Why would they ever need protection from water jets?
Because of how people actually clean? The source explicitly mentions this realization. In a real workshop, the janitorial staff, or even the machine operators, don't clean things gently. They use compressed air to blow dust off surfaces. They use soaking wet rags. They might even use a hose nearby to wash down the floor.
Right. The janitor isn't checking the IP rating of your box before he sprays the floor near it. And if I see dust on top of a cabinet, I'm probably going to blast it with the air nozzle.
Exactly. And moisture and fine particles move in really unexpected ways when you blast them with compressed air or a high-pressure hose. You are creating a pressurized stream that drives particles and moisture into tiny gaps that gravity alone would never touch. The builder realized that IP55 wasn't about surviving a hurricane. It was about providing a necessary buffer against aggressive workshop cleaning habits.
That is such a practical point. You aren't designing for the ideal scenario where everyone tiptoes around your panel. You're designing for the guy with the air nozzle who thinks he's helping.
Precisely. And the builder actually made a comparison table that really shifted their thinking. They stopped asking, is this rating mathematically higher? And started asking, what risk am I actually designing for? If there is a hose anywhere within 20 feet of this thing, you need IP55 logic.
I love that pivot. Okay, so we've got NEMA 12 for the construction quality and IP55 to handle the aggressive cleaning habits. But now we have to talk about the invisible killer, the term that I think confuses everyone because it sounds like we're talking about global warming or smog, pollution degree.
Oh, this is a classic terminology trap. When we hear the word pollution in everyday English, we immediately think of exhaust fumes, plastic in the ocean, environmental damage.
Right. If I say my workshop has high pollution, it sounds like I'm running an unregulated coal plant in my basement.
But in electrical standards, specifically IEC 60947 and UL508, pollution degree is purely about the stuff in the air that can mess with electrical insulation. Dust, moisture, conductive particles.
Yeah.
It's entirely about how those environmental conditions affect the safety distances inside your electronics.
It's about the gunk that physically lands on the circuit board.
Exactly. It defines the clearance, which is the air gap, and the creepage, which is the surface distance you need between live parts to prevent electricity from jumping where it shouldn't.
Okay, so let's break down the degrees mentioned in the source material. Pollution degree 2 versus pollution degree 3.
Pollution degree 2 is the standard assumption for most office or lab panels. It assumes non-conductive pollution only, basically regular household dust. And it assumes that if there is condensation, it's strictly temporary.
Which is exactly what the builder assumed they had. They thought, it's just a workshop, it's not that bad.
Right. But then comes the big aha moment. The builder realized they had seasonal temperature swings in that space. Cold mornings, warm afternoons. That creates condensation on the cold metal surfaces inside the box.
And they had metal dust floating around from the grinding.
Exactly. And here's the absolute danger zone.
What?
When you mix metal dust, which is highly conductive, or even just dry dust that becomes conductive when it gets wet from that morning condensation, you have left pollution degree 2. You are now officially in pollution degree 3 territory.
And what does that mean for the actual components? If I take a degree 2 contactor and put it in a degree 3 box, what happens?
You risk arcing. The safety distances engineered inside a component rated for degree 2 are simply smaller. If conductive gunk builds up across those tiny gaps, think of them like stepping stones for electricity. Eventually, the current will jump the track. You get short circuits, you get tracking across the insulation, and eventually, you get a fire or a completely dead machine.
So it's not just about keeping the box clean so it looks nice. It's about acknowledging that if the box fails, the components inside are sitting in a bath of conductive soup.
Yes. The builder realized that by ignoring the temperature swings and the specific type of dust, they were effectively eroding the built-in safety margins of those really expensive Schneider and Siemens components they bought. They were risking safety, not just reliability.
This is fascinating because it's all invisible until the moment it fails. So the builder decides to tear it all down, version 2.0. They aren't just buying a slightly better box. They are changing the physical design of how the panel goes together. What were the big changes they made?
The first one is simple but brilliant, and it involves using physics to your advantage, gravity. In the first build, they had all the cable entries coming in from the top of the box.
Which makes total sense, right? It's easier to drop wires down. It's standard practice in a lot of IT racks.
But liquids and dust follow gravity. Top entries are a massive risk. Dust settles on top of the cabinet. If someone spills coffee, or a roof leaks, or condensation drips off a pipe, it lands right on top. If a seal fails there, gravity pulls that contaminant right down the cable, straight through the gland, and directly onto your live components.
It's basically a funnel for failure.
Exactly. So in the rebuild, they switched entirely to bottom entry.
So even if a seal down there fails, gravity is working for you, not against you. Water would literally have to defy physics to crawl up into the box.
Precisely. They also replaced those standard glands with high-quality sealed glands, and, this is crucial, they used proper blanking plugs instead of tape for the unused holes.
RIP to the load-bearing tape. It served its time.
It had to go. No more tape. They also added drip loops to the incoming cables.
Explain a drip loop for anyone who hasn't seen one in practice.
It's just leaving a U-shaped slack in the cable right before it enters the gland. Imagine the wire coming down from the ceiling, dipping down a few inches below the box, curving back up, and then entering the bottom of the enclosure.
I see. So if water runs down the outside of the cable, it hits the bottom of the U shape and just drips off onto the floor.
Exactly. It can't climb back up the other side of the U to get into the connector. It's wonderfully low tech, costs absolutely $0, and is incredibly effective.
That is such a pro move. And inside the box, did they change the layout at all?
They did. They moved the terminal blocks much higher up in the cabinet.
Why higher?
Because dust inevitably settles. If any dust does manage to get in, it's going to accumulate at the bottom of the enclosure. That area is the sump. In the first build, the terminals were mounted right at the bottom.
So the electrical connections were just sitting in the dust pile.
Exactly. If your live connections are sitting on the bottom floor, they are the very first things to get buried when dust gets in. Moving them up gives you a massive buffer zone. It's like building your house on stilts in a floodplain.
It's so logical, but I bet 90% of people just put the terminals at the bottom because that's exactly where the wires come in.
It's the default habit, but it's the wrong default for a dirty environment.
Now, there's one more trap the source mentions, which I found really insightful for long-term maintenance, the looks sealed trap.
Ah, yes. This is the painful lesson, that a panel can look absolutely perfect on day one, but still fail on day 100. Vibration from the workshop machinery can slowly loosen those glands. A well-meaning technician might over-tighten a latch and slightly warp the door frame.
Or maybe someone changes out a cable and reuses an old rubber insert that doesn't quite fit the new wire gauge.
Exactly. Entropy is always working against you. So the builder introduced a field check routine. No lab equipment required, just a visual inspection every few months. Checking grand tightness by hand, inspecting the gaskets for cracks because rubber dries out over time, and looking for tiny dust trails near the seams.
And taking photos, right. I thought that was brilliant.
Yes, taking photos on your phone. That's a great tip because dust buildup is super gradual. You don't notice it day to day. It's like watching grass grow. But if you compare a photo from January directly to a photo from June, you'll immediately see if you have a slow leak.
It's like those spot the difference games, but with much higher stakes. Wow, look at that gray film on the breakers that definitely wasn't there last Christmas.
Exactly. It's practical data logging for the analog world.
So we've gone from a failed box with tape over the holes to a robust NEMA 12 IP55 pollution degree aware system. What is the core takeaway for our listener who might be planning a build right now?
The builder sums it up perfectly in the narrative. The best upgrade wasn't a physical component. It wasn't switching to a more expensive brand. It was a complete change in thinking. You have to design for the environment, not for the clean workbench where you assemble the panel.
That is the key. Your workbench lies to you. It tells you everything is clean and safe and perfect, but the real world is dirty and it vibrates.
And to help counteract that, the builder created a screening chart. It's a simple logic flow they use for every new project now. If there is airborne dust, prioritize sealing over ventilation. If there are temperature swings, instantly reassess your pollution degree. If there is washdown nearby, look at IP55 or higher right out of the gate.
It turns the whole decision from a hopeful guess into a solid process.
It removes that nice-to-have mentality. The enclosure becomes a non-negotiable part of the circuit protection.
I love that. The box is an active component, not just a passive wrapper.
Exactly. If the enclosure fails, the circuit fails. It's really that simple.
This has been such a great reminder that the devil really is in the details, or in this case, in the dust. I want to leave our listeners with a bit of a challenge today, something to explore on your own. I want you to go to your workshop, your facility, or even just your garage utility room. Find your oldest set-and-forget enclosure.
I know exactly where this is going.
Open it up. Run your finger right along the bottom lip of the inside of the box.
The classic white glove test.
Or the dirty finger test. See what actually comes up on your finger. Is it perfectly clean? Or is there a layer of history sitting in there? And ask yourself, what assumptions did I make when I bought this box, and was I entirely wrong?
It's a very humbling experience, but it's really the only way to learn. It is infinitely better to find dust on your finger today than to find a scorched contactor tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thanks for unpacking this with us. It's been a really fascinating deep dive into the dusty corners of engineering.
Always a pleasure to keep things sealed tight.
Until next time, keep learning, keep building, and seriously, go check your gaskets.
Goodbye, everyone.